When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends, and welcome if you're new. Today I'm going to be sharing some creepy and downright strange stories from state parks and national parks all across the country. As always, if you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, whether it's from a state park or somewhere else, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Now, without further ado, be sure to hit that like button, subscribe if you're new, and get ready for these creepy and downright strange state park and national park horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. Tyler State Park Creature by Tachanka Sausage. Living in rural Pennsylvania, nestled near the picturesque Tyler State Park, has always offered me moments of serenity amidst the chaos of my everyday life. My name is Tom, and Tyler State Park has been my sanctuary for as long as I can remember. It's a haven for horseback riding and leisurely walks, and I often bring along my faithful companion, Lola, for company. One of the highlights of my time at the park is riding Irish Red, a magnificent chestnut horse owned by my buddy John, a seasoned veteran who owns the White Pine Horse Farm nearby. Despite his age and hip injury from his service days, John's dedication to his farm and horses never wavers. In exchange for helping the chores around the farm, John graciously allows me to ride Irish Red pretty much whenever I want. One exceptionally mild morning in February, I decided to skip my average horseback ride and take a leisurely walk through the park instead. The sun was just starting to shine its golden light on the surroundings, hinting at a day full of peacefulness and excitement. Walking along the familiar trails, I couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. The woods usually are so welcoming, but today they seemed to be whispering secrets, and shadows danced among the trees. Then, I spotted a figure on the opposite bank of the river. It looked like a lone man clad in nondescript clothing, his presence sending a chill down my spine. As I sat in the park, I began to feel uneasy when I noticed a glint of metal in the man's hand. It was a gun, and seeing it in a public place made me a lot more uncomfortable. I decided to call out to him, hoping to understand the reason behind his unsettling presence. However, he didn't respond and stared at me chillingly, making my blood run cold. Fear gripped me like a vice in that moment, and I turned around to flee. But before I could make my escape, I heard something that confirmed my worst fears. I heard him raise the gun, and his intentions were clear. With adrenaline coursing through my veins, I ran for my life. The sound of gunfire echoed behind me through the forest. In a desperate bid for safety, I jumped to the ground, reaching for my phone and dialing John's number. my voice trembling as I recounted the harrowing encounter. His reassuring words offered a sliver of hope amidst the chaos, guiding me through the tumultuous ordeal with unwavering support. As I navigated the labyrinth of trees and undergrowth, my heart pounded in my chest, each footstep a reminder of danger lurking beyond the shadows. But when the moment of reckoning came, I refused to cower. I confronted my assailant head-on, drawing upon a wellspring of courage I never knew I possessed. Ultimately, it was a battle of wills, a clash between fear and fortitude. And when the dust settled and the echoes of violence faded into the distance, I emerged victorious, my resolve unbroken by the trials of that fateful day. Reflecting on the experience in the safety of my home, I realized the importance of vigilance and resilience in the world fraught with uncertainty. But amidst the darkness, there is always a light, a beacon of hope guiding us through the darkest nights. I continue, my faith in humanity strengthened by the kindness of strangers and the resilience of my spirit. I don't know what was going on that day. I don't know why that guy shot at me. I don't know why I didn't get hit by the bullet. But I can tell you one thing. I never ran, and I never escaped so hard in my life. So, when you're out there in state parks, just be careful when you're solo hiking. You never know who or what you might run into. In the archives of unsolved mysteries, few tales evoke as much intrigue and fascination as the disappearance of John Odom in the remote and rugged terrain of the McCallamy Wilderness. Nestled within California's Sierra Nevada mountain range, this pristine wilderness is known for its breathtaking vistas, dense forest, and challenging trails. Yet, beneath its serene facade lies a sinister enigma that has baffled investigators and haunted the imaginations of countless adventurers. John Odom, a seasoned outdoorsman with a penchant for exploration, set out on a solo backpacking trip into the heart of the McCallamy Wilderness on a crisp autumn morning. Armed with his trusty gear and an adventurous spirit, he embarked on what was intended to be a routine journey through nature's splendor. Little did he know, though, that this excursion would plunge him into the depths of an inexplicable disappearance that would confound search parties and ignite a frenzy of speculation. The journey began innocuously enough, with John traversing well-worn trails that meandered through towering conifers and meadows adorned with vibrant wildflowers. The crisp mountain air invigorated his senses, and the untamed beauty surrounding him stirred his soul. As he ventured deeper into the wilderness, he encountered a few fellow travelers, relishing the solitude that enveloped him like a comforting shroud. Days turned into nights, and John pressed onward, his determination unyielding despite the challenges posed by rugged terrain and unpredictable weather. Yet as the sun dipped below the horizon on the fourth day of his expedition, something inexplicable occurred. John failed to check in with his loved ones, as he had diligently done each and every evening, sparking concern among his family and friends who awaited his progress. The ensuing days saw a frantic search effort launched by local authorities, aided by volunteers and specialized rescue teams. Helicopters buzzed overhead, scouring the vast expanse of the wilderness with infrared cameras and searchlights. At the same time, ground teams combed through dense undergrowth and rocky outcroppings in a desperate bid to locate any trace of the missing hiker. Despite exhaustive efforts and the deployment of advanced search techniques, the wilderness yielded no clues to where John's whereabouts may be. His tent was discovered intact, nestled among the trees near a babbling brook, its contents undisturbed, save for the absence of its occupant. Puzzlingly, there were no signs of a struggle or foul play, leading investigators perplexed and grasping at straws as to what the heck happened. It didn't look like a wild animal attacked, didn't look like humans had even been here either. What could have happened? As days turned into weeks and weeks into months, the search gradually waned, and John's fate slipped into the realm of speculation and conjecture. Theories abounded, ranging from encounters with wildlife to accidental falls or voluntary disappearances. Yet, none offered a satisfactory explanation for the baffling circumstances surrounding his vanishing. Rumors swelled among the locals, whispering tales of otherworldly phenomenon, and these evil spirits that had purportedly haunted the depths of the Macalame wilderness for centuries. Some spoke of spectral figures that roamed the forest at night, luring unsuspecting travelers into the embrace of the unknown. Others speculated about hidden portals or vortexes that could whisk away a person to dimensions beyond comprehension. Others mentioned UFOs and aliens and substance of that. In the absence of concrete evidence, such conjectures seemed fanciful and even far-fetched at times. Yet, they underscore the profound mystery that shrouded John Odom's disappearance, leaving a lingering sense of unease among those who dared to venture into the untamed wilderness. The enigma of John Odom's fate remains unsolved, a haunting reminder of the mysteries hidden within the heart of nature's most remote sanctuaries. His name echoes through the annals of history, a testament to the enduring allure and the unfathomable depths of the Macalame wilderness, where reality and myth intertwine in a tapestry of intrigue and uncertainty.
In the fall of 2016, a friend and I decided to go hiking late in the afternoon in a densely wooded wilderness area in a state park in the mountains not far from Fayetteville, Arkansas. My friend Rick was close to 60 at the time, and recovering from a triple bypass he had undergone around 16 months earlier. We had been hiking this and other trails for about a year following his operation to strengthen his cardiovascular health. That day, a weekday, I hiked with a bottle of water, my wallet, and my keys, but nothing else. Nothing to protect myself. The trail we picked was popular, and usually had a lot of people hiking on the weekend. We have hiked this spot dozens of times before. We were both comfortable with the hike and had never had any problems on the path, or any other for that matter. While Rick is older, and at the time a little feebler after his health problems, I was in my mid-40s, well over 6 feet tall, and in fairly good shape, so was not very worried about our safety. The trail we were on is in a state park adjacent to federal parkland. It is an outdoor enthusiast's dream. Most of our trek that day was completely uneventful. We just enjoyed the autumn leaves and chatted casually as the sun dropped lower in the evening sky. We had seen nobody else that day, which was probably to be expected given that we chose to hike late afternoon on a weekday. We had completed about 4 miles of the 6-mile loop, and up to that point, it was an uneventful time as any other. On our way back to the car, and about 2 miles away from the parking area, we spotted someone. We saw them through an opening in the trees. I saw a young woman, probably a college student on the trail ahead of us, moving in our direction. At first, I paid her extraordinarily little attention. As the distance between us disappeared, that changed. I did not know her, so I could have been mistaken, but there was something about her posture and expression that just seemed off. As she got closer, it struck me that she had a semi-panicked look on her face as she was moving quite quickly. She was in athletic gear, so maybe she was just booking it for some cardio. She occasionally turned her head and stared over her shoulder, though. I followed her eyes and eventually noted another human about 50 yards behind her walking up the path through the trees. This second woman was not wearing any hiking gear. In fact, her clothing struck me as totally inappropriate. It was a warm afternoon, and we were well inside a wooded state park, a couple of miles from any homes, but she was wearing semi-formal, offish casual attire and a light jacket. I thought the clothes must have been secondhand because they were tattered, ill-fitting, and did not look washed at all. She was fit and athletic-looking, who could not have been more than 25 or 30 years of age. It was so bizarre. The clothes were wrong for the trail, and they were wrong for someone her age. Everything was off about her. Her shoes struck me as odd, being even more peculiar. When she got closer, I noticed she was wearing scuffed leather flats, casual shoes with no ankle support. I found it completely odd because you do not just see people on trails dressed as she was, and you never see them wearing shoes like that. My hiking partner, Rick, had not noticed anything, apparently, as he was completely involved in the conversation and just kept on talking. The second woman briefly glanced up and made eye contact as she neared us. The alarm bells went off in my head like no other. There was something in her eyes that made me feel uncomfortable. I do not know what she was thinking, if I am being honest, but I swear, she had contempt in her face. Part of me wondered if I had offended her by staring, so I diverted my eyes and kept walking. I tried to tell myself that maybe she was homeless, maybe she was just wearing the only thing she had, and I was just being rude. But the warning bells were still going off in my head like sirens. I am not a paranoid person at all, so having a sixth sense go off in my head left me very unsettled. I have fantastic peripheral vision, so I turned my face toward Rick and acted like I was listening to him, but I was watching the creepy woman out of the corner of my eye. The moment we passed, she spun her head around to study us. She slowed her pace a bit. My internal alarms grew louder. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw her come to a stop and drop her face toward the ground. Her body half turned on the trail. It was very odd behavior. Rick and I kept walking for about 50 yards further. We made it around a bend in the path, and I looked back at the woman before the trees obscured her from view. She was just standing there. Her face was down, but she was staring a hole through us in the corner of her eyes. That was the first time I realized that I could not see her hands. One was inside her jacket pocket, and the other was hidden from my view on the other side of her body. It creeped me the hell out. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. For half a mile, I did not see her again and had begun to wonder whether the first woman, the co-ed, had felt danger as well. Clearly she had, I thought, and that is why she practically was running through the woods at dusk. It also struck me that the creepy woman had stopped and studied Rick and me, like she was deciding whom to follow. We were not moving as fast. We were walking as quickly as Rick could manage, and he was clearly feebler than the co-ed. Those thoughts amped up my senses, and I still felt uneasy, so I periodically checked behind us. At certain points through the woods, I could see more than 100 yards, and I never saw anything. I began to worry about the co-ed. My hair stood up for a second time as I felt the strangest sensation of being watched. Again, thinking I was paranoid and half mocking myself for being afraid of the creepy woman, I turned my head around to assure myself she was not there. I was wrong. She was there, following with her head down and moving briskly about 100 yards behind us. But with her hands hidden, I turned my head back to the trail in front of us and we kept walking, still trying to convince myself that there was nothing out of the ordinary happening, that I was just being rude because she was dressed like a homeless woman. About 200 yards further along the path, I turned my head back to Rick and my heart raced a bit. She closed the distance by half or more. Each time we would walk around the bend and the woods obscured her location, she would emerge much closer to us on the next opening. I told myself that I was just being paranoid, but nevertheless, trying to get Rick to pick up his speed just a little bit. By this time, he was clearly aware that we are being followed, and he was uncomfortable as well, though to his credit, he did keep talking. With a half mile to go before we reached the parking area, I turned my head once again, and she was just 10 feet behind us. I had not seen or heard her get that close, and it freaked me out. I literally jumped out of my skin. One of her hands was in her pocket, and the other was behind her back. I got the distinct feeling that she had a weapon of some kind, and that she had no fear of me even though I was considerably taller, albeit several years older. There was no mistaking her demeanor. She meant to do us harm, or at the very least she intended to intimidate us. I weaved my car keys between my knuckles and my right hand. I handed my water bottle to Rick, and made an obvious fist with my hand. With a half mile left in her hike, I thought to myself, if this is nothing, she'll pass us and move on, as clearly she is moving a lot faster than we were. I was accustomed to people overtaking us when I walked with Rick, but she did not pass, and never acted like she knew we were there, which was the creepiest part. I kept my head turned toward her as I walked and tried to get her to make eye contact, but she did not look me in the eyes at first. She kept acting like neither Rick nor I were there on the path, just a few feet ahead of her. She had slowed to follow closely behind. I was completely unnerved and that made me angry. I wanted her to see how upset I was, and to convey with a look that messing with me was a mistake. When she finally did make eye contact with me, I glared with clenched fist. There was an instant where I could not read her expression. She was simply blank. But as she studied my face, she appeared to be simultaneously agitated and a little less confident. I was conveying one thing in the look of my face: back the hell off. And at this point, I did not care if it appeared rude. She apparently thought better of whatever she was doing and slowed her pace so that the distance between us began to grow to about 20 feet. But she was tense and kept whatever she had in her hand very closely hidden behind her back. I never saw her hands this entire time. I know she had to have some kind of weapon, and I believe that she meant to do us harm, but I also know she recognized that I was ready to fight. I was mentally preparing to charge at her if I saw a gun or a knife, as I knew Rick could not outrun her. I thought to myself, I might just surprise her. I also realized that I needed to have her in front of us. A few hundred feet further, about a quarter mile away from where we were parked, she's still stalking us, and I had had enough. I was in equal measures afraid and furious. I told Rick that we were going to stop and let her pass, loud enough for her to hear it. Just as I was getting ready to stop on the trail and make her walk in front of us, she veered into a small clearing, plowing through the waist-high brush, crossed a ditch, and scurried through a tree line of trees to a road that ran through the woods and between the main road and the parking area. I kept my eyes on her the whole time. She had a car. It was parked alongside this little service road, partially hidden by shrubs, not in the parking lot. The last time we made eye contact, just before she climbed into her car, it was clear from her expression on her face she was incredibly angry. I glared at her, expressing my own anger, but kept walking. When her car started and she drove away, Rick got quiet before asking me, "What in the hell was she doing? Did she have a gun?" I told him I did not know. I never saw a weapon. We walked back to our car without saying another word. Once the engine was on and the doors were shut, we chatted a bit more about this weird situation and decided to call the authorities and report the incident, just to make sure that they have it on record and to maybe have them check on the poor co-ed who had passed us first. To this day, I have no idea what that creepy woman was doing and what she was planning on doing to us. Maybe she was going to rob us, harm us, scare us, I have no idea. I am just thankful she decided better of it. I have hiked that trail more than 50 times since then, and I've never seen her again. This happened to me during my yearly campout at Lake Texoma in North Texas. The lake itself was built during the Second World War using mainly German prisoners of war. It sits outside the Texas-Oklahoma border and covers roughly 89,000 acres and sees about 6 million visitors on an average year. It is, to my knowledge, still one of the biggest reservoirs in the country and my favorite place to spend my birthday. Every year, the week before or after spring break, I load up my camping supplies into my car and make the 30-mile drive. My usual place to set up is Eisenhower State Park, located on the Texas side of the border and just happens to be named after Dwight D. Eisenhower, the famous World War II general and president who was born nearby. The cool thing about the park is that, for a small fee, I can take my pick of spots that offer running water and electrical connections. Although I normally camp in a relatively traditional manner, having access to power nearby can be convenient. Perhaps the best part of camping, so early in the season, the temperatures are still reasonable. You could go out as little as 2 months later and already be nearing 90 plus degrees during the hottest part of the day. This also means there are far fewer other campers in the park. I've been visiting the lake since before I can remember, honestly. As a matter of fact, one of my earliest memories is me bawling my head off and holding my bloody foot that I hurt. My dad sped our boat to shore for me to go get medical care, after stepping on a broken bottle. We all wore shoes in the water after that from then on. In all my years of going out there, I had never heard anything about wild packs of dogs roaming the area. While groups of wild pigs have been an ever-growing problem in our state, wild dogs, not so much. Or maybe that is just my ignorance showing and it is a bigger deal than I'm aware of. Whether it is or not, I was not expecting what happened my second night. I believe that evening, no one else was within a mile of my camp. It was just starting to get dark, and I walked a few feet down to the water. Oftentimes, I will sit on the shore and watch boats across the lake with a cup of coffee and enjoy the calming sounds of the waves looking lightly at the shore. It had not gotten completely dark yet, but the shapes I noticed approaching me were unidentifiable. As they grew closer, I could make out the shape of two dogs walking slowly down the shore. I figured they belonged to another camper and called out to let them know I was there. As the seconds passed, no answer came and the dogs continued to get closer. While I am not, nor have I ever been afraid of dogs, I do practice common sense measures with those I'm unfamiliar with. When they were within about 10 yards of me, I see three more dogs of varying sizes come down the cliff at an angle and join the other two on the bank. My caution was beginning to shift into fear. Odds are that if a group of dogs forms a pack without the moderation or influence of a human, they become feral and can be very dangerous to any people they meet. I was honestly the only person on this night that I've even seen around the area, and I definitely didn't want my night to get any worse than it already was. Running away would just engage their prey drive and I would be run down and mauled for sure. With no other choice, I stood still as they approached me. The two larger dogs I had seen first began to smell me. I did not move or pet them as they did so. While the leader sniffed, the other dogs began to surround me and walk slowly toward me. Even if I had never feared dogs before, this freaked me out. During this whole interaction, I did my best to not identicate that I was scared, but the closer the three came, the more nervous I grew. Things would come to a head when I felt one of them bump me on my back. I did the worst thing I possibly could have and jerked away. This was all the pack needed to begin attacking me. Each of the leaders had grabbed me, one on the hand and the other had a mouthful of my leg. The rest had ganged up and took a firm grip on my right leg. This was not some rough play either. I could tell they were trying to pull me down to the ground. I quickly lost my balance and dropped to one knee, but fortunately for me, I had a makeshift walking stick in my right hand and used it to break my fall. One of the leaders used this as an opportunity to go for my face. However, I foresaw something like this and jabbed it with my stick before it reached me. This gave me the time I needed to get myself back to standing mode. With a firmer stance, I started jabbing at the others. A few let go and backed off, only to renew their attack seconds later. Rage and frustration began to take over me, and I started swinging wildly at them. Here and there, I would hear a screech come from the darkness until finally, the assault ceased. I stood my ground and waited for it to begin again, but the pounding of my heart was all I could hear. To be safe, I walked slowly back up the hill to my camp, watching the whole time for any movement in the darkness. When I reached it, I turned up my lamps and searched for wounds. My left hand was bloody after washing it. I could see that it was not that bad. The bad bites were to the back and sides of my calves. The best I could do was clean them up and wrap them up until I could get to home. The gates did not close until 10 p.m. that day, so the ambulance was able to scoop me up and get me to a hospital rather easily. I spent the rest of the evening getting treated. Among the procedures was my first set of rabies shots. I was overjoyed to learn the procedure is far less extreme than it was when I was a kid. Although you still must get the vaccine over several appointments, science has made major strides in this area. The following morning, I called a friend to pick me up and take me out back to my camp. I obviously needed to go down there and break down everything. I made sure to notify the office about the attack, but I do not know if anything was ever done. I watched the evening news and checked the papers for 2 weeks, but nothing about the dog packs or my attack was ever mentioned. For all I know, the decision was made to handle the problem quietly and avoid any hits to the coming tourist season. The last few times I have camped there since the attack, I have not encountered any feral dogs, so perhaps that it was just a one-time thing. My run-in with the dogs motivated me to finally get my license to carry a handgun, though. It was something I had been wanting to do since the law was passed, but I could never justify it to myself. In addition to carrying while about and about in the public, concealed to prevent any problems with the general population, I am legally allowed to bring my pistol along with me when I go camping. Since I believe self-protection is a right, I probably would have had it with me whether it was legal or not, but thankfully, I do not have to take that chance. My goal by sharing this story is not to create fear among others who would love staying in the outdoors and especially our lovely state parks. I simply want to remind people that even in places when we feel comfortable, the unexpected can happen. So, if you are ever visiting Texas, I highly recommend Lake Texoma and the attractions around it. Just be sure you wear your life jacket when you are on the water. Do not drink too much, and keep your eyes open for the creatures who share the land with you. Whether they are rattlesnakes or feral dogs, one misstep or loss of concentration could really ruin your day. Thanks for listening to these creepy and downright strange state park horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. If you enjoyed these stories, please be sure to slap that like button and subscribe if you're new. And don't forget to turn on notifications so you don't miss a new episode as I upload them multiple times a week in all things natural and supernatural. I'd love to know in the comments down below what story was your favorite tonight. It helps me pick out better stories in the future, and I love seeing your reviews. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, whether it's something in a state park or something different entirely, be sure to submit your scary story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Thank you guys so much for supporting the way you do. I couldn't do this on a daily basis without you guys. If you're on the go, but don't have YouTube Premium, but still want to download and listen to your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories no matter where you are, you can download them absolutely free from Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and pretty much everywhere else you find your favorite podcast online.